Moncrief on News Talk.
When the work of regenerating Temple Bar began, it was trumpeted as a cultural quarter containing not just restaurants and pubs, but art spaces and chic shops. Most importantly, it was also planned to be a place where people would live. Back then, people queued up to buy apartments, among them the journalist Frank MacDonald. But oh, how times have changed. Something Frank's been writing about this weekend in the Irish Times. Afternoon, Frank.
Good afternoon, Sean.
What was Temple
Bar? Great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you again, too. What was Temple Bar like before the regeneration began?
Well, I mean, it was a completely different place. I mean, people seem to imagine that it was always like what it is now, you know, kind of full of bars and revelers and nightclubs and all of that. But it was actually a place that was really, you felt, when we moved in there in 1995, it was 30 years ago now. You know, we felt like kind of urban pioneers. You know, here we were in this really lovely part of Dublin, which had mercifully been spared the fate that was originally planned for it, which was to be turned into a huge transportation centre. And many of the historic buildings in the area would have been demolished. I'm talking about the area to the west of the Central Bank, essentially. Mm. And you know, it was saved. And Charlie Haughey played a role in doing that, because he famously pledged in 1987 that he wouldn't let CIE near the place. So, you know, there was a wonderful architectural framework plan done for the area by a group of talented young architects at the time. And I mean, it was an extraordinary thing for them as well, because, you know, they had been given a chance to remake and redo and rejuvenate, you know, a whole 10-hectare chunk of the city centre, which is something that younger architects today would love to have that chance. Mm. And so there was a lot of beautiful contemporary buildings being built. You know, I particularly mention the ARC Children's Cultural Centre, which claimed to be the first of its kind in Europe. And, you know, there was this lovely image of you know, primary school kids all very excited, you know, being led through the area during the daytime, and going down Curve Street in front of our apartment building. And, you know, with a teacher in front and another one leading up from behind. And that was the kind of, as I said in the article in the Irish Times on Saturday, that was the kind of Dr. Jekyll image of Temple Bar then. And, it was much later that it developed a kind of a Mr. Hyde persona. And what people don't realize is that, you know, if you build a hotel in this country, you are entitled to a license if it has more than 20 bedrooms. In other words, a license to turn the entire ground floor basically into a pub, and then to create a function room, so-called, i.e. a nightclub in the basement. So, you know, I remember when Fitzsimons Hotel, which is one of the biggest pubs and nightclubs in the area now, when that was just being finished, and I was walking down to the Clarence Hotel tea room, which was a wonderful place to have lunch with the late Nuala Fualo, and we met Kevin Fitzsimons on the site. And I said to him, I said, "How many bedrooms have you got, Kevin?" And he says, 20. And I said, "That's the number that you need for a license." And he said, "Yeah, exactly." And Nuala said, "This is just wonderful altogether. You know, you could have, if you had friends staying over, you could put them up in a room here and they'd have a view out towards the Hapenny Bridge and all that kind of stuff." And I said, and then she said to him, "I think you're the first builder I ever met who isn't from Cavan." And Kevin said, "But I am from Cavan." And he knew that by providing 20 bedrooms, you'd be able to open up a big pub and nightclub on the same site. And the same thing happened in lots of other parts of Temple Bar. I mean, you know, the Temple Bar pub, which is now the most photographed pub in the entire world, that started out as one room. It was just on a little room at the corner called Flannery's Bar. And, you know, it was one of those places which was full of old, you know, alphalas and pint, drinking pints and having chats and all the rest. There were no traditional musicians there then playing, you know, Camogie kind of stuff that you get from nearly every pub in the area now. And, you know, it had a completely different atmosphere. And, you know, and there was something extraordinary, you know, having lived in Harold's Cross, to move in right into the center of town. And, you know, you were within, everything was at our doorstep, you know, and that's the reason why we queued for a week at the time. I think it set a record for queuing in Temple Bar for an apartment. And we got a beautiful apartment on the top two floors of a renovated 1840s warehouse building on the corner of Temple Lane and Cecilia Street. And, you know, you walked out the door and everything was there. And, you know, there was a real kind of sense of optimism about the future of Dublin then, you know, and at last things seemed to be going in the right direction. People were moving into town and, you know, moving into, as we were, up the upper floors of buildings, whether they were being renovated or newly built. And, you know, it seemed, you know, nearly everywhere in the city centre then in 1995, you know, it was really like a bit like Barcelona, even the weather was. And there was something new to marvel at and celebrate, you know, nearly everywhere you went. Yeah. And, you know, we had a newsagent right across the street and an internet cafe on our ground floor. And we had all the shops in Grafton Street and Henry Street within walking distance, and good restaurants like Fitzer's and Trastevere on Temple Bar Square, and Nico's and Frere Jacques, and Gruel and the Mermaid on Dame Street, and the Clarence Hotel's tea room that I mentioned, and Eden on Meeting House Square, where there used to be a wonderful food market every Saturday. And all of these things are gone now. And, you know, and it's just such a tragedy, really. And so I suppose the piece that I wrote was kind of like a bit of an elegy for city centre living.
Yeah. The thing that struck me about the piece was that this wasn't even a gradual process. So you moved in 95, and by 97, 2 years later, they'd put gates up around Meeting House Square.
Well, that's right. I mean, I remember, I actually wrote a piece at the time in 1997, 2 years after moving in. And, you know, I flagged in the Irish Times that Temple Bar was turning into Dublin's version of Sachsenhausen, the entertainment zone of Frankfurt in Germany, where nearly every building on its quaintly cobbled streets, a bit like Temple Bar really, is either a bar, a restaurant, a nightclub, or a tourist trinket shop. And I said, you know, that the main drag along Temple Bar and East Essex Street was thronged at weekends by drinkers on a seemingly endless pub crawl, and the atmosphere can be unsavoury and even dangerous. And gates had to be put around Meeting House Square. I mean, this is one of the things about the Temple Bar project, was that it wasn't just about, you know, kind of building new buildings and renovating older ones. It was also about the idea of creating new public spaces in the city. Mm. So Meeting House Square was one of those public spaces that was created as part of the Temple Bar architectural framework plan. And, you know, it was one of the primary goals of the whole project. You know, that and Temple Bar Square and the Curved Street and other, and Cow's Lane in the west end of Temple Bar as well. And, you know, here they had to put up gates, you know, to close it at nighttime because of fears that it would be trashed. And, you know, this was kind of like an admission of failure, and I suppose an official acknowledgement that we have a real problem in Ireland with our public realm. And it's just coincidental that, you know, right now there is this public consultation going on about the pedestrianisation of College Green, extending all the way back along Dame Street to the corner of South Great George's Street. And, you know, I mean, this is all great, you know, and very European in so many ways. But you'd have to wonder about our relationship with, you know, public space in the city and how it's treated. I mean, I saw photographs online today, I think it was, or maybe it was yesterday, Drury Street was packed with people, you know, sitting out on the footpaths in sunshine on Saturday. And, you know, Dublin City Council posted a couple of images of the mess that they left behind them. I mean, you know, what's wrong with us? I mean, this doesn't happen in other European cities. It just doesn't. The place is cleaned up straight away, or people take their rubbish home.
Yeah,
put it in a bin or whatever.
I walk down Drury Street every day, and particularly if it's sunny and on a Friday, Some of the shop owners had taken to putting up signs saying, please don't sit on the pavement. And sure, you can't see them because people are sitting on the pavement in front of the signs.
Yeah, they couldn't get into the shops. People who wanted to do a bit of shopping couldn't get into the shops. That was the problem because the place was so crowded. And then the mess left behind and all of that. I mean, so you just wonder, like, you know, if the traffic and, you know, the buses and taxis and everything else are taken out of College Green, I mean, what is it going to be used for? I mean, what will its function actually be? I mean, I presume they're going to provide some park benches for people to sit on and all the rest of it. But, I mean, what is it going to be? You know, how is it going to feel? Or is it going to turn out like the boardwalk did, you know, which was a wonderful idea of, you know, cantilevering this boardwalk over the river along Bachelor's Walk and Aston Quay, Bachelor's Walk and Ormond Quay. And then, you know, like they had to take away some of the benches that have been provided there nearest O'Connell Street because they were just being used for drug dealing.
Yeah. Is it we just can't have nice things, Frank? Or, you know, is there a planning issue here?
God, I would hate to think that. Yeah. You know, I just think that, you know, like the whole situation really, you know, from our point of view, really became, you know, like, I don't know. I think the planning issue is a real problem because, you know, a lot of developments in Temple Bar that Temple Bar could have done without were granted planning permission, you know, having regard to the pattern of development in the area. In other words, everything becomes a kind of a self-reinforcing phenomenon. So that because there's a pub on this street, therefore there's a planning permission can be granted for another pub on the same street and so on. Mm. So that's why, you know, the likes of Crown Alley is such a drag in relation to the proliferation of pubs and, you know, the blasting out of loud music and all the rest of it from the Badass, which I remember. The Badass Cafe, when it was a lovely place to go. I mean, families with kids and all could go in there. And it had a really lovely atmosphere. And they just turned it in 2011, I think it was, turned it into a so-called traditional Irish pub. And they managed to get away with that. And, you know, I think the last straw for us was when Shan, a completely harmless and lovely Indian restaurant that did a late night kind of business. People would be rolling in there after drinking a rake of pints and would have an Indian meal at 11 o'clock or 12 o'clock at night, a bit Spanish in style in a way. And Shan closed down and then the place was taken over by a new operator called the DL Bar. And we heard the noise of loud dance music emanating from somewhere on the street. And I went down to have a look to see what was going on. And there was this DJ with decks playing at 88 dB. I measured it on my decibel meter, which I bought, you know, to keep an eye on some of these places or to keep a lookout on them, for them. And a whole crowd of dancers bopping on the floor in front of a fully stocked bar. And I remember coming out of that place and two guards, by complete coincidence, a weird thing, it was 11 o'clock on a Sunday night, and two guards passed by. And I said to the guards, I said, look, this place is operating without a bar license. It hasn't got a license to be a pub or a nightclub. And one of the guards went in and he came out a few minutes later and he says, well, I've inspected the premises and they have a fully functioning kitchen. And then, leaning over towards me, he said, it's a gastropub. Have you not heard of that? And it's this kind of utter... And I said to them, look, there are people living around here. You know, I said, point to the apartment buildings directly opposite and beside it and so on and so forth. So we just had it at that stage because, you know, not only was the noise being carried out through the air, you know, ambient noise, but also it was being carried up through the building. Because it was right on our party wall. So, you know, at that stage, we started looking to get out of the place because I was spending a lot of my time, you know, and I was by this stage over 70 and I was spending a lot of my time, you know, making submissions on planning applications and turning up in the licensing court to object to the renewal of music and singing licenses and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, I just had it at that stage and I just said, God, you know, we have to get out. So, and that was a personal thing. And I mean, I know there's still people living there, and I think that they need to be protected against the proliferation of noise in the neighbourhood, but also like the illegal conversion of, on a widespread basis, of apartments into tourist shortlets via Airbnb and other platforms. You know, all of that needs to be taken into account. And I mean, I'm afraid that, you know, a lot of the decisions that are made about the city are actually made by people who live in the suburbs, who've never lived in an apartment in their entire lives, you know, and they just don't understand what it is that really is important to sustain and you know, promote city centre living. I mean, this is really one of the cruxes that we find. And I mean, you know, this is not just a Dublin thing. This applies in Cork City, in Limerick and Galway and Waterford, and in all of the towns in Ireland, you know, where there's vacant buildings that could be renovated for use as residential accommodation. And why don't we just get on with that?
Yeah, but it seems as if planning authorities seem to struggle with the idea of mixed-use areas. It's either the city centre in which it's full of pubs and that's it, or you're out in the burbs where people live.
Yeah, but that's not what they said they were going to do. Do
no,
you know what I mean?
No,
there's a big
yeah.
difference between what they say, you know, the mission statements and the you know, the declarations in the Dublin City Development Plan and all the rest of it. I mean, I think the problem with Temple Bar was that it became such a tourist hotspot that, you know, they just basically sidelined us. You know, they started not paying really any attention to the fact that there were people living in the area and that they deserved some, and that we deserved some consideration as well. And, you know, that they kind of just allowed the place to develop like that for that reason, because it was making so much money. You know, and like you're talking about millions and millions, it was being made by pubs and restaurants in the area, and you know, and all those tourist shops as well. You know, and you know, I don't know. I mean, I just worry about the future of Dublin. That you know, we're building all of these hotels everywhere you look nearly nowadays, and you know, I walked through the Liberties a couple of weeks ago, and you know, it's full of, you know, blocks of student accommodation, you know, purpose-built student accommodation was very lucrative for developers and so on, is full of, it's hotels to beat the band. I mean, 10 years ago, there wasn't a single hotel in the area. Now there's at least a dozen. And in one case, you know, on Mill Street, just near Newmarket, there's a hotel going to be built right opposite another hotel. So you're going to have tourists looking out windows and other tourists looking out windows directly across the street. I mean, what kind of a city are we creating? Mm. You know, what kind of a city are we creating? And then when I hear the government going on about the GPO, I mean, it's as plain as a pikestaff to me that one of the best things that could be done with the office buildings that were built in the 1920s that are part of the GPO complex would be to turn them into residential accommodation. And, you know, Trevor White has a piece in the Irish Times today saying exactly that you could probably fit 100 apartments in there and make them all apartments for sale, you know, and also include 10% for social housing. But apartments for sale in the GPO complex surrounding a beautiful courtyard in the middle of it all, and with views out over the streets on both sides onto Henry Street and Princes Street. And you'd have a residential accommodation right in the middle of town. And that would act as a flagship for other buildings in O'Connell Street, where nobody lives, to be turned into apartments as well. And that's how we start reclaiming the city.
Yeah, Frank. Thanks a million for speaking with us today. That was the journalist Frank MacDonald. A lot of comments on some of the things Frank were saying. One person says, is this guy for real? He moves into Temple Bar and then does nothing but complain about the pubs. Why move to Temple Bar knowing the pubs are there? Because they weren't there when he moved in. That's the point. The point was the intention behind Temple Bar was that it was mixed usage. People would live there. There'd be art centres there, all that kind of stuff. What it is today wasn't what it was planned to be at the time. And as he said, the Temple Bar pub was just like one room with a few old fellas in it having pints. Another texter says, I remember when outdoor dining was allowed. We booked a dinner with friends in Temple Bar and it was scary because of the crowds and the atmosphere. I think a lot of things changed for the worse in town after the pandemic, which became a no man's land. What happened in Temple Bar was all about money, says his texter. The city council let it happen. Somebody else says, tell that man to stop moaning, please. Well, he said his piece. Irish people don't leave their mess behind when in Spain, Italy, Florida or Dubai, says his texter, but think they know that they can get away with it in Ireland. It's everywhere on beaches, parts, etc. We need heavy on-the-spot fines by many wardens. Another texter says, you can't live in the city centre then complain about living in the city centre. Well, again, to repeat what he said, what Temple Bar was intended to be was mixed use. And in many European cities, you'll find that in the centre of the cities that they're mixed use, and the planning authorities take into account various things, that people go into town for entertainment, but also that people live there, and they kind of try to strike a balance there. In Spain, they have people cleaning the streets with brushes and dustpans, says his texter. And another comment about Temple Bar itself. As a Dubliner, I wouldn't bother going into Temple Bar. It's just for tourists, full of loud Americans and drunk English hen and stag groups. The prices are insanely high. And someone else says, Dublin is a disaster in terms of public spaces. We want nice things, but we don't look after them or invest in spaces that don't make profit. We need clean, safe spaces like you have in other countries with those lovely, pleasant squares you can sit outside and have a coffee. Someone else says, anytime I meet a tourist, I advise them to stay away from Temple Bar. It's a part of the city that is purely for tourists. And as somebody from Dublin, it makes me sad that this is what they see. It's almost like a strip of fake Irish gaudiness built for people to spend money. Yeah, it's an interesting way of putting it. It could be anywhere, really. It's like an Irish bar in Tokyo or something. Temple Bar is an absolutely filthy tourist-only kip. The Ark was an amazing building that was completely gutted and desecrated. What's left is an outside facade only. Someone else says, I would never live in Temple Bar. When I was a student, I rented on Camden Street. We used to have people throwing up outside our door after a night out. Even as students, it was pretty gross to have to step over vomit as you made your way to a 9 a.m. lecture. And someone says, Temple Bar was meant to be a bus stop until Charlie Haughey got his way. No, the idea was originally that entire area was going to be developed into a kind of a super bazaaris. Like, so you'd have all the buses would congregate there rather than, you know, around Dublin, there's a few different bus stations. And so CAE had actually been buying up a lot of the property there and then renting it out. And so it was kind of at the, you know, back before the redevelopment started, there was loads of little jewellery shops and kind of funky little places there that a bit like what it was intended to be, but not what it actually became.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.